is. In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
That's right. He is here. He's in studio. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joining us on this Monday afternoon. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I'm
so
well.
Glad to hear it. How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. Pretty good. A relatively low-key kind of weekend.
Nice.
We did have an improv show on Friday night.
Yes.
It was a lot of fun.
How did that go?
It was a good show. It was maybe a little more sparsely attended than you like. But I think everyone had just, their spirits had been broken and they just wanted to stay inside for a while. So that's fine. But yeah, we got out there. We had some fun. It was a good time.
Nice, nice. And then next. Is the next show the anniversary show?
The next show is March 13th.
Oh, okay.
With our friends at the Bangor Arts Exchange, and we'll talk about this more when we get closer. But as an interesting aside, for I believe maybe the first time ever, we will be going with a 7 o'clock start time.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
The reality is that they are just hopping over there at Bay, and so they asked, pushing up our start time to make room for a couple of more acts to do shows that night. And we said, you know what? Sure. You guys are great.
Yeah.
And so it'll be a fun little experiment to find out if that makes any difference at all. What will probably wind up happening is literally our entire audience will show up at 8:05 as they usually do and have missed the entire show. Yeah. Like, that's what I'm guessing will happen. But you know what? That's why they need to pay attention.
That means the group can get to post-show festivities sooner.
That's what I'm saying.
There you go. Always a silver lining.
Indeed.
All right. Well, what else did you do this weekend?
Other than that, not a lot. Like, enjoyed the milder weather on the weekend. That was nice. Was able to convince young Stella to go for a longer stroll than usual. She's been pretty reticent to go too far with the weather being what it was. But yeah, we had a nice walkabout yesterday. And then on Saturday did pretty standard stuff. Went to the movies. Got my hair cut.
Oh yeah,
to the grocery store, you know,
stuff like
being like a grown ass man like I am,
uh-huh.
Sure. Behaving like an adult. Although I get weird in the grocery store. I'm sure you know what that's like. You know,
you get weird in the grocery store. What do you mean?
It's difficult to explain. Difficult to describe, articulate. I behave oddly when I'm in a grocery store. In ways that both
I need to hear more
that both delight and maybe irritate a little bit my lovely bride.
Do you push the cart and sing along to the music?
I am, it's funny, and I know I've reached a certain point in my life because every single store that every single song that comes out on the over the speakers at the grocery store is my jam. Like, it's like, oh yeah, you're playing all the music that I'm familiar with from my high school days. And it's just like, oh, so I'm old now. That's where we're at.
Yes.
I'll do the occasional shimmy and shake and I'm doing a lot of stuff that frankly Sheridan pretends like it bothers her, but I think she enjoys it.
You grab stuff off the shelf, go behind the back into the basket with it, things of that sort.
Yeah, I make I sneak up behind her and stand very close. And I mean, I'm saying these things out loud. I'm like, and everyone out there is like, so he's a psychopath. Like, that's what he's got serious issues.
Pretend to get excited about certain foods. Pop tarts, pop tarts.
I will raise my voice at inappropriate times when I'm in the grocery store. Yeah, it's all in good fun. Like, everybody's having a good time.
You have to. It's because it's kind of a mundane job.
Yep.
I don't know why I'm going off on this, but now I'm fascinated. But do you go with a list?
Sheridan makes a list.
Yeah.
And that's, we follow, I mean, we deviate from the list pretty regularly.
Yes.
But, in terms of just certain fundamentals that need to be seen to when we go to the grocery store, you want to make sure you get that stuff. A lot of the extraneous things, whatever. But, like, if you miss one of those core items, it's like, oh, well, now I have to go back.
I'm so OCD that if I go and I make the list out, I arrange it by aisle.
Oh wow. Yeah,
that's bad.
Yeah, no, we're much more a hither and yon kind of shopping couple.
Free range.
Yeah, it's you know, we'll just go, and then it's like, oh right, we needed this thing that's right. You know, 3 hours back that way. Okay, we'll just go and we'll go divide and conquer and whatnot.
It's an adventure.
Yes.
Nice. Now you also saw a couple of movies this weekend.
I did.
I said it earlier. I did not know a movie existed called Brahms the Boy One. Let alone two.
Well, that's because it does not exist. The first movie is simply The Boy.
Oh.
So, yes. So the strangely and confusingly titled Brahms : The Boy 2 is the sequel to 2016's The Boy.
Okay. Well, I don't remember that one either.
Well, neither do I. I didn't see it, which gives me the opportunity. And, you know, and I think we've talked about this previously. I really love having the opportunity to see the sequel to a movie I have not seen. You know, that opportunity doesn't come along very often anymore. Like, I've been doing this long enough where it's like, I catch pretty much everything on the first go round. And so, having the chance to see the sequel to a movie I didn't see, again, something that just delights me, I don't get to do it very often. And so when the opportunity comes around, I'm very excited. Unfortunately, this movie's terrible. real bad. It's one of those sort of horror offerings that is, you know, it's not scary. It's not interesting. The storytelling is bland. The performances are wooden. There's literally nothing here to recommend this movie. I'll give you the plot synopsis such as it is. Katie Holmes plays a woman named Liza. She lives in London with her workaholic husband and her son, her young son. There's a home invasion and which physically and emotionally traumatizes both Liza and her son. It's more of a physical incident with her, although she has nightmares. But her son shuts down and refuses to speak. So he hasn't spoken since this event took place. He communicates by writing on a notepad. Like, it's not like he's checked out entirely. He just doesn't talk. And so they decide, you know what? We need to get away from this place. And so they headed out to the country and rent a guest house on the land of a former grand estate. Everything looks great. It's like, oh wow, this is lovely, and everything's beautiful. Let's go explore nature and walk out in the woods. And then the little boy starts hearing creepy whispers and follows them to where there has been a really just really weird and terrifying doll that has been buried in the woods. He digs it up and takes it home because apparently that's what you do. Because he's literally apparently never seen a horror movie ever, because we all know how this plays out.
Right. Don't take that home.
So he brings it home, and his parents, which to their credit, suitably creeped out by the fact that this, you know, because it's a life-size like doll with a porcelain face and real old school creepy.
Oh yeah.
But the mom cleans it up and gives it to him and all that stuff, and then we start to learn more about the doll. The doll's name is Brahms. It's like, oh, that's a weird name to give your doll. And the kid's like, oh no, he told me that's his name. Yeah.
There we go.
And there we go. And we're off. Katie Holmes starts to have some suspicions about the doll and what might be going on. Meanwhile, the doll doesn't really do much. Like, everyone just kind of sits around, looks creepy. Every once in a while, its head's in a different place than it was when you looked at it a second ago. But for the most part, it doesn't really do anything. But the boy starts to develop a more sort of codependent relationship with the doll. The parents want to take it away, but then the kid starts talking, and it's like, oh, the doll's helping him to talk, and so we can't take the doll away. But then it turns out they probably should have taken the doll away, because there's apparently a dark and a bleak history of this doll causing problems on this particular estate for centuries. And I'm guessing that's where it connects to the first movie, although this movie doesn't seem all that worried about connecting itself to the previous installment, so I guess I don't need to worry about it either. And Brahms, he's a doll. He's an evil doll who doesn't do anything, doesn't say anything, And yeah, that's about it. Not a lot happens in this movie. And again, I'm not someone who needs like nonstop, like, you know, gore or, right, or any of that. But, you know, if you're going to go in that, lean in that atmospheric direction, like, give me some atmosphere.
Sure.
But there's nothing. It just all feels like a very big waste of time.
Oh dear. All right. Well, let's talk about the other movie you saw this weekend. I have no idea what to expect here. I love me some Call of the Wild. As a kid, it was one of my favorite books. I love Harrison Ford, but I was a little creeped out by the CGI that is filling the trailers. Tell me there's more than that.
It's a little like I get it. Yeah. I was right where you are.
Okay.
When I went in to see the movie, and I'm not going to lie to you, Rich. There's some Uncanny Valley stuff going on with Buck. Like that's undeniable, and I'm not going to sit here and tell you otherwise. What I can tell you is that, at least for me, it didn't take that long for me to sort of like move past that.
Okay, good.
Because they did a really, whoever the mocap performer was, did a really good job and was able to sort of give us that sort of, the movement felt right. And there's always a little bit with the eyes, and like it's difficult, especially with animals, to get like the way they look exactly right. But it's not nearly as distracting as the trailers lead you to believe.
Okay, good,
it will be.
Good. And I did see, maybe you saw it too, it was on social media, a couple of clips of the motion capture actor doing his thing and then transitioning into the dog. And what he was doing was incredible.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different conversation. But the reality is, like, we need to start really looking at finding ways to recognize mocap actors in a way beyond just, you know, these sorts of like viral clips or whatever where we see them, because it is a very distinct and important offshoot of performance. Like, I think it's incredibly valuable, especially when you're making movies like this, which have characters that are entirely computer generated on the screen, and you know, and that can't happen without the template laid forth by the motion capture actor. So, get off my soapbox, but yeah, those performances are as valid as anything else that you're going to see on a movie screen. You're going to tell me that person's working less hard than a voice actor or something like that. Like, it's, you know, I think they deserve the recognition for the work that they're doing. But yeah, it's actually a pretty solid adaptation of the story. It's been family friendlied a little bit, like Disney-fied a little bit.
Oh, sure.
Like, because, you know, the original, the Jack London book, and I kind of paged through it after I had seen the movie, just to sort of remind myself, because I watched the movie and I'm like, oh, well, this isn't nearly as dark as I remember it being. And then I kind of flipped through and I'm like, oh, that's because they just sort of eased, they just took their foot off the gas a little bit with some of the horrible, horrible things that happen in the Call of the Wild. But yeah, it's about a dog named Buck, who he's living in Santa Clara, California. He's the spoiled dog of a local judge who's played by Bradley Whitford.
Oh, wow.
Nice. You know, he's only in a couple of scenes, but you know, he's Bradley Whitford doing his Bradley Whitford thing. But yeah, this dog is spoiled, has the run of the town, and living his best life until he's kidnapped and sold to be taken to the Yukon territory to serve as they're always in need of dogs, whether it's for prospectors or other sort of dog sled situations. Doesn't look good for Buck. Like, he encounters, the first people he encounters up there are not nice people. But it's not long before he winds up in the company of a pair of mail delivery folks who are working for the Canadian government, working a mail run. And that's where he learns to become a sled dog. And he, you know, he struggles at first because, you know, he's a completely different lifestyle, but he's a smart dog. He adapts, big and strong, finds his way, and becomes a very reliable member of the sled team. Over the course of his time with the sled team, he occasionally crossed paths with a gentleman by the name of John Thornton. That would be Mr. Harrison Ford, not really a prospector, just one of those, he's a guy who's out there because, you know, life hasn't life dealt him a bum hand, and he sort of wandered out into the wilderness in an effort to forget the more difficult aspects of his past. And so he keeps sort of bumping into Buck, but you know, he's becoming quite a hero as far as pulling the sled and the mail run and whatnot. But all good things come to an end, and that darn telegraph comes to the territories, and so
technology.
And so the sled dog team gets sold, and they get sold to a dude who a foul-mouthed dandy named Hal, played by Dan Stevens. Who, man, I got to tell you what, it's delightful when. From the very second someone steps onto the screen, you're like, oh, this guy's terrible. This guy's clearly bad news, and I can't wait to see when he receives his comeuppance, because he will receive his comeuppance.
Yes.
But he and his family are off on some sort of wild goose chase looking for some legendary lost cabin, and so he buys Buck and his buddies to pull the sled, but they're completely at sea. They don't know what they're doing. And so it's not long before they wind up getting mired and stuck out in the woods, where they've been followed by John Thornton, who can't stop thinking about that darn dog. And so he wants to go help. And then it turns into a whole thing. Long story short, he winds up taking Buck home with him while Hal and his crew continue onward. And he nurses Buck back to health, and they become inseparable, and they become pals, and then they decide to go off on a grand adventure for reasons that I will leave unsaid, because you know, you want to give people a little chance to know what's going on. I was not expecting to like this movie as much as I did. Like, I had a really good time.
Good.
Like, it's cornball, and it's like, it's very much like, well, it's reminiscent of the sort of like adventure type movies that you used to get from Disney back in like the, you know, in the 60s and 70s, like those sorts of movies, the very like almost painfully earnest, like there's but really sweet and, you know, very good hearted. There's some pretty funny bits. Harrison Ford actually looked like he gave a crap, which was weird because I wasn't expecting that at all. Like, I figure, oh, man, like you're going to act next to a dude in a green suit with ping pong balls. Like, like, I can't imagine you're engaged with this, but yeah, he didn't seem checked out at all. Like, he seemed like he was having a pretty good time. The rest of the human actors do a fine job. And, again, the CGI work on not just Buck, but the other dogs as well. Again, it's a little distracting, especially at the beginning. But once you settle in and once you sort of let the story engage with you, because, again, it is a classic story and one that I think, you know, certainly warrants introduction to this new generation. There have been a couple of relatively recent adaptations, but I mean, nothing really big. I mean, almost since, what, the 70s, you know what I mean? And so to reintroduce this story to a whole new generation is wonderful. I had a good time. It's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, it's not bad. And considering what I was expecting, like, that's pretty good.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, I think you've seen it. I finally caught up with Jojo Rabbit.
It's funny. I assume that became available in some, you know, new sort of respect. Because a lot of people I know have been talking about it just recently. I still haven't seen
it.
I've heard nothing but wonderful things from everybody that I've talked to. Like, people whose opinions I really trust have talked about the movie and have really been enthusiastic about it.
Well, so. Yeah, and you know, I love me some Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
One of the two or three best things he's ever done.
Oh, fantastic.
And Scarlett Johansson was great, but the kids.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's what you keep hearing. Wow. is how wonderful the child performances are in that movie. But yeah, no, I mean, it's one of those things where it was maybe the one from last year that sort of fell through the cracks for me. I'll see it. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? I'll get there.
It's worth it. Absolutely. Alan, we thank you as always.
Of course.
Hope to see you at the supermarket soon.
You should be so lucky.
I know. We'll see you Wednesday right here.
Yes, sir.
Alan Adams of the Main Edge talking movies with us. Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family, Stillwater Avenue in Bangor.